we're looking at the challenges in the music streaming economy here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Musicians have been hard hit in COVID without live venues to perform in concerts and on tours. The industry has depended on streaming services like Spotify to keep their music out there and to stay afloat. The Union of Musicians and Allied Workers, it's rallied thousands of music workers to demand better deals with streaming services and to get their fair share of royalties. Are you a Spotify user? What do you want to know about who profits and how the business model works? Are you a musician? How have streaming services affected you financially? 800-642-1234. Ben Cesario covers the music industry for the New York Times, writes about the streaming music conflicts. Ben, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks very much for inviting me.
Well, you've covered the music industry for decades. How has Spotify changed it?
Spotify and streaming in general have really dramatically changed the music industry. There's a totally different economic model in the music business now than there was in the days of selling records and CDs and even downloads. Those were sort of based on the idea of selling an item to somebody that they own. And Spotify and other streaming services are based on the idea of basically renting it, that either you pay a subscription fee and you get access to all the music, or you listen for free and you suffer through ads for that access. But it's a totally different system. And the idea of how to divide the money that comes in has really come under fire lately.
Yeah. So what you've seen is a real market disruptor in the economic model for the music industry. Give us a sense of what revenue, what profits are like. How much money are music streaming services making these days?
Well, Spotify is not profitable. Spotify is listed on the New York Stock Exchange. I don't have the current market capitalization in front of me, but it's like $50, $60 billion. They're a huge company, but they don't post profits. They have always blamed this on two things. Number one, the fact that the record companies and other music rights holders take a huge share of their income. It's around 66-67%. It varies. But around 2/3 of all the revenue that Spotify takes in, it pays out to rights holders. The rest they use for their operations. But Spotify, like a lot of tech companies, has sort of made a choice to use that margin to expand rather than to make a profit. That's what Amazon famously did for many, many years. Was they were basically a break-even or unprofitable company, which they used to subsidize all of the promotions that they had.
So if Spotify is keeping a third of the revenue to do what Spotify wants to do, the rest is going to rights holders. Where is the breakdown here on the money and where revenues are going? What is the conflict?
Well, Spotify last year paid $5 billion to music rights holders, which is a great deal of money. And Spotify and Apple and the other streaming services, Tidal, Amazon, YouTube, et cetera, they have really turned the music industry around. The numbers were plummeting for over a decade, and now they're climbing again. And so the industry overall really owes something to streaming, that it has reinvigorated the whole business. It's brought a lot of money in. It's brought a lot of investment in. And, you know, there's sort of champagne corks popping because of that. But the musicians are now taking a really hard look and sort of saying, you know, everybody's getting rich here except for us. You know, Spotify, although it's not technically profitable, it's clearly a very valuable company on the market. Their salaries are high. That's information they do disclose. The record companies are massively profitable. And many of them are going public. Warner Music went public last year. Universal is going public later this year. There's been a huge amount of deal activity going on there. So the scrutiny really is about, of all those billions of dollars that are going back into the quote unquote music industry, you know, what actually makes its way into the pockets of musicians? Mm-hmm. And there's a, you know, it wouldn't be fair to say that none of it is. You know, musicians make money, and you can believe that the superstars that, you know, that we hear about all the time, the Drakes and the Taylor Swifts and the Beyoncés and all of them, they're making a great deal of money from streaming. And many artists who are able to control all their own copyrights and intellectual property, they do well. But the heart of the complaint from the artists that are complaining about it, and by the way, it's not everyone is complaining about it, but the ones that are, they're basically saying the streaming model has created a sort of winner-takes-all economy where if you're not a superstar and if you're not somebody who is able to make the kind of music that draws mass audiences, then you're just not making a living wage from it.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Ben Cesario, who covers the music industry for the New York Times. And we're discussing streaming services, their profits, and what share the musicians, the creative talent should get, how it works. You can join in. Are you a musician? How have streaming services affected your finances? Have record sales plunged? What do you think would be an equitable payment for streams? 800-642-1234. So, Ben, explain about putting everything into one pot and then dividing revenue from there for musicians. How does that work with Spotify?
This is like the most complicated and confusing thing ever. So I'll do my best.
We'll buckle up.
But basically, all the money that Spotify or any streaming service, and Spotify is kind of, on the target right now, but any of these streaming services, all the money they collect in a given month, say, goes into a quote unquote pot. And then what they do is, they take the total number of streams, and you have the revenue in that pot is the numerator, and the streams is the denominator, mm-hmm. and you get a sort of overall rate of the dollars or pennies per each stream, and then the pot is then divided up by what share of the total anybody gets. So, you know, if you're Taylor Swift or if you're Drake or you're Dua Lipa, let's say you have 2 or 3% of all the streams in a given month. Theoretically, you and your record company and anybody else who has rights in your work is getting 2 or 3% of the total. That sounds reasonable, I think, in the big picture. But what that really means is that if you or I are paying our $10 a month, the portion of what we pay that goes into that goes toward royalties is not going just to what we listen to. Mm-hmm. Taylor Swift, even if I never listened to one of her songs, she would be getting that 2 or 3% of my money every month. And Drake is getting some of my money every month. And let's say I'm a fan of a particular artist or a niche genre like jazz or classical music, those kinds of genres get just a tiny fraction of the overall amount. And so even if I'm paying my $10 and listening just to that stuff, they're only getting pennies out of what I pay into the system. So there are some proposals now for how to change this model so that each listener's money goes just to what they listen to. There's a lot of questions about whether or not that would work.
Yeah, so we're going to get into what needs to change and what models might work with Ben Cesario, who's a staff writer at the New York Times reporting on the music business. You can join in. Maybe you run a record label. How much money are you seeing from streaming services? What questions do you have for how Musicians are able to stay afloat during these times and get their music heard. Join in 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're talking about whether there will be action in reforming the music streaming economy in the wake of the pandemic's economic pain on the creative class. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Musicians, they're putting pressure on Spotify and other streaming platforms for a better system, a better way to divide up royalties. Spotify bills itself as the world's most popular audio streaming subscription service. 356 million users, 158 million paying subscribers worldwide, billions of playlists. How do you think the money should be distributed? 800-642-1234. We have music industry writer at the New York Times, Ben Cesario, who stays with us. So, Ben, what are musicians pushing for here? We've heard about a penny per stream. What do musicians want?
They want more money. And, you know, even the stars, they're keeping quiet about this. But behind the scenes, even them, they complain a bit that they feel that they deserve more. The ones, for example, in the musician, the Union of Musicians and Allied Workers, they do have a specific economic proposal. As you mentioned, they want to be paid a penny a stream. The background about that number is that for Spotify in particular, the rate per stream that Spotify pays, that's not exactly the way that they compute it, but there is a way to reverse engineer it. And it comes out to around a half a cent per stream. Mm-hmm. The number fluctuates and it can be sliced and diced a number of different ways. But in general, it's a half or even less of a cent per stream. And so this organization, they have a number of demands about Spotify in particular. And the one that's gotten the most attention is this penny per stream. And, you know, they've chosen that number, I guess, to represent what they consider a fair wage.
Is a penny per stream, do the economics work? Is that feasible?
For Spotify, not really. I mean, under their current system, you know, they don't assign a rate and say, okay, you got one click, here's what you get paid. As we were saying before, they put all the money into a pot and then divide it up based on what people listen to. And there's a number of complications with this. One is that there's a gigantic amount of music being made and released. And this has been developing for years, and that in the digital music model, it's a lot easier to make and release music. You don't need to have a record company manufacture a CD. You don't need to ship pieces of plastic around the country to sell it. You know, there's lots of ways for musicians, even just somebody in their bedroom, to pay a very small amount of money to these sort of aggregators and distributors that you drag your song into a box on Dropbox or something, and then it gets it to all of these service providers like Spotify. And during the pandemic, that's exploded. So there's a tremendous amount of music available. There's a tremendous amount of listeners. Spotify itself has something like 350 million users around the world. So when there's a lot of music being listened to by a lot of different people, and they're all sort of clicking constantly, and they have things on these, you know, playlists that they save and algorithmically generated things, it just brings the price per stream very low. Mm-hmm. So if Spotify were to pay 1 cent for every stream, I don't have the calculation ahead. And, you know, I don't know if that's possible for me to do, but it would just exceed their revenues. You know, they can't do it. Just sort of like we could ask the IRS to pay each of us $1 million. But you know, the government doesn't have the money to pay all of us, right? There's not enough money going in for that. I'm sure somebody will correct me on that. But, and then that's the general idea, right? Like Spotify can only pay out what they take in. So under their current model, they couldn't do that. But the question is whether they could change their model. Apple recently announced in a shrewd PR move that they do pay a penny per stream. There were some caveats on that, but what they're basically saying is, you know, the money we take in from subscribers, the average is about a penny per stream. And the main reason for that is that Apple does not have a free tier. Mm. They only have paying subscribers. I believe that it also has to do with the way prices are discounted around the world. You know, here in the US, a monthly subscription to any of these services is around $10. But around the world, they charge less. So in various parts of the world where, you know, the average income is lower than it is here, they can't charge as much money. So they charge less for the subscriptions. There's also family plans and mm-hmm. student plans and whatever. And that tends to bring down the total. So Apple, there's sort of caveats on it, but Apple has basically played its card and said, well, you know, we've shown you can do it. So that's a bit of a challenge to Spotify.
We're talking with Ben Cesario, covers the music industry for the New York Times, as we look at Spotify, how musicians are pushing for better royalty rates, more sustainable income. Your insights, 800-642-1234. Grant is joining us in La Crosse. Hi, Grant. What do you make of the streaming services?
I've been using like Spotify since the very beginning. I love the access to the music, all music, but I understand that the artists aren't getting paid enough. My theory is then that I think Spotify should add a tip jar that you can like give money directly to artists that you're listening to or new artists that you find.
Grant, thank you. In terms of your subscription, you said you've been with Spotify since the beginning. How has your subscription changed?
Honestly, I've tried to switch to like Tidal or some of the companies that pay better royalties to the artists, but Spotify has the selection. It has all the most of the music that I listen to is available on Spotify.
Gotcha. Grant, thank you. You know, Grant loves the access, the breadth and the depth of the music, Ben, and, you know, maybe a tip jar would help.
They actually do have that. That was something that they brought on during the pandemic. I'm not sure about all the details, but they did introduce that. And actually the Union of Musicians complained about that. I mean, they basically said, this is an insult. They should just pay us a fair wage instead of keeping the rates low and then offering this, you know, gratuity like a cup on the counter at the donut shop, asking for tips. There's also some other complications with it where, you know, exactly who gets the money for any piece of music. It may not just be one person. There's an artist, but there's usually a record company involved, and there's usually a songwriter or many songwriters involved. So if you're an artist who played a cover version and somebody leaves you a tip, should the money go to the performer? Should it go to the songwriter?
Yeah.
Who does it go to?
So very quickly here, how do we get to a user-centric model? What might that look like?
Yeah, the user-centric model, the idea there is that instead of all the money going into a single pot and then being split up and sliced and diced, the idea is that each user would sort of have their own pot. And if I'm just listening to the Grateful Dead, then the only artist should make any money from what I'm listening to is the Grateful Dead. This has been proposed, and actually there are tests of it. SoundCloud, which started out as kind of a YouTube type platform, but it also now has subscriptions. They have been testing this for the last month or so. And there's not a lot of data since it's brand new, but they have said they're very confident that it's easy to implement. All of this stuff is very automated in terms of the counting, and that it would increase the payment for different kinds of artists. The tricky thing is that for every, you know, if it's about redistribution, like this doesn't change the amount of money that's going into the pots.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's redistribution, there's winners and there's losers, and nobody wants to be the loser.
Ben, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Ben Cesario reports on the music industry at the New York Times. We have a link to his recent reporting on Spotify at WPR.org/mornings. Coming up, we talk with a Chicago musician about making ends meet and what the Spotify streaming model means after this news update on the Ideas Network. Can the music streaming economy be changed? We're talking about it on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A coalition of thousands of musicians, the Union of Musicians and Allied Workers, or UMAW, they're trying to get better deals with streaming services. In their Justice at Spotify campaign, they say that to generate a single dollar on the platform, a song needs to be streamed 263 times. Are you a musician or work in the industry? What do you think would be an equitable payment for streams? Join in 800-642-1234. Andrew Klinkman is a member of the Chicago bands Spirits Having Fun and Marker. He's a member of the Union of Musicians and Allied Workers Chicago. And on the UMAW Nationals Streaming Subcommittee, Andrew, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much, Kate. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Tell us how you are doing in the pandemic and how you are getting through these times.
Sure. Well, as listeners probably are aware, when the pandemic hit last year, basically all touring work, any live shows, basically ceased to become a stream of income for us. Speaking for myself personally, I had several tours lined up in the fall that were canceled that were going to be, major sustaining work for the year that was canceled. I teach private guitar lessons as, one main stream of income for myself, but live shows have basically all but dried up. And also in the recording industry, it became a lot more difficult to push projects forward and get recordings going because obviously in-person interaction was almost entirely, prohibited for so many months. And so in the past year, the Union of Musicians and Allied Workers was formed to kind of band together collectively to fight back against some of those systemic issues that were facing artists for far longer than before the pandemic, but to try and work together to ameliorate some of those conditions.
Yeah, I'm wondering, has the UMAW helped musicians organize, even though you're not at the bargaining table with any single company per se?
That's correct. So that's been really something that has been obviously a challenge, but also has kind of forced us to really open our minds to envision the kind of music industry that we want to exist in, right? Because we're not actually, bargaining at one single workplace with one single employer, we kind of have to build this thing from scratch. There isn't really a blueprint for building, there has been fantastic work done in recent years with freelancers unions and rideshare drivers and things of that like. In terms of workers kind of spread out through the gig economy. But there really has not been a similar effort with mostly freelance musicians and musicians putting out their own projects and recordings on the various streaming platforms.
So what is the goal of the union? What are you trying to do here?
So a big first goal is really just to reframe the streaming issue, right? Spotify has spent tons of money over the years on a PR campaign and lobbying as well to give the public the understanding that the music industry was on the rocks and basically about to collapse, and Spotify swooped in and made music profitable again. But the question that we've been asking is profitable for who, right? So people maybe by now are starting to learn that the actual streaming payout for artists on the platform, or for the mass majority of artists on the platform, is extremely, extremely low. We're talking the average per stream rate is about 0.38 cents. So almost a little bit more than a third of a cent per song streamed, which is really almost nothing, basically. While the corporation's valuation has increased and increased and increased, right? Especially over the past year during the pandemic, Spotify's income has increased and artists has not, right? Especially now that we are relying even more than ever on recorded music income.
You're also looking for more transparency in their practices and you know how these streaming platforms work, and what do you see in terms of understanding what's going on the inside?
Yeah, so there are a lot of closed door contracts that we simply do not know the nature of between Spotify itself and major record labels. You know, when Spotify was first established, it was, you know, it kind of built its legitimacy off of these deals that they were able to secure with major labels and publishing outfits. And a lot of the details of those contracts are not made public. They're private contracts. And in a lot of ways, the streaming ecosystem is always tilted towards those larger, more powerful entities in the music industry. So we are demanding, among our demands, is just a broad transparency demand to make those contracts public, to show the public where their money comes from, because it's uncertain whether they are able to make all of the billions of dollars that they make from advertising revenue. Or are they using user data and selling it to companies? We don't know these things, but we have our suspicions. And obviously, with advertising revenue being such a huge portion of their income, we'd like to know more about, you know, from a surveillance standpoint, what they are doing with users' data, how are they using it to turn a profit in addition to the user subscription.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with guitarist Andrew Klinkman, who's a member of the band Spirits Having Fun and Marker in Chicago. He's also a member of the Union of Musicians and Allied Workers, which is advocating for musicians as we talk about the UMAW and what to do about streaming and royalties paid out. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Paul is with us in Northern Illinois. Hi, Paul. What is your take on streaming?
Wow. After listening to Andrew talk for so long, thank you very much for, you know, some insight into the world you're in. I've been a musician since I was a boy, grew up teen in the 80s, tried the demo thing. Dad was drumming for Frank Sinatra and all that. So but he advised me, hey, don't get into music way back then because there's not going to be a lot of money in it. And I have a lot of friends that went through the music scene and got by, and a lot of them had to teach even back then. It didn't take a pandemic for most of us to understand that music wasn't going to win a lot of people money. But it got a few people money, those that got the record contracts. So kind of wild that the record companies still seem to be controlling all this. I was just thinking that I thought Spotify theoretically would be a platform that would spread it and make it more accessible. And as a consumer, I find it fantastic that I don't have to, you know, save up my money and say, that's the album I'm going to get, and then misfire, you know, because there was one great tune on it and the rest was kind of garbage. But from a musician standpoint, I think this whole idea of saying let's at least fix the amount per click rather than have some sort of shady deals, I respect that. I don't know, do you know if mainstream artists are making more than, say, the average Joe per click?
Andrew?
That would be my question.
Yeah, so you actually guided me perfectly to one of our other major demands in the campaign, which is the demand that Spotify move from what they call a pro rata payment model to a user-centric payment model. And without going too far into the weeds, basically the way that the pro rata model works is that the money that Spotify earmarks for rights holders' payouts goes into one big pot, right? And that pot is divvied up based on market share among artists. So if, for example, Taylor Swift accounts for, you know, 28% of that streaming pot, Taylor Swift receives 28% of the entire pot, right? So you can see very quickly how smaller independent artists have their percentage of that pot increasingly squashed down to smaller and smaller shares. So really, the pro rata model really promotes this incredibly unequal system in terms of how rights holders are paid from streaming. And what we're demanding is a transformation to a user-centric model, which would mean that based on each individual user's, you know, subscription cost, if you choose to listen to Taylor Swift 28% of the time every month, then 28% of your $10 a month or whatever it is goes to that rights holder, as opposed to just taking this enormous pot and giving 30% to this major artist, 30% to that major artist, 20% to another, and then, you know, 0.00003% of that pot to, you know, X independent smaller artist, if that makes sense.
You know, you're still starting with the same amount of money, though, and would divvying it up in just a different formula, as you're suggesting, actually change the industry and create a livable wage for musicians?
So that's a fantastic question, right? We're presenting these demands to, you know, try to increase the equity in streaming for artists and increase the payouts across the board, largely for smaller independent artists, which in many ways makes up the, you know, the broad base of UMA's membership right now. But you make a great point, which at a certain point, you know, shuffling around the fractions, we're trying to win an increase here, win an increase there. The real power in our campaign, in my opinion, is simply the recognition that we are workers, that we create value that Spotify profits off of. And, you know, Spotify gets by on this image of themselves that they're themselves just scraping by. They would love to pay their artists more, but they can't afford it. Or that they, you know, like I said before, that they single-handedly saved the music industry from the internet, right? And what we're saying is, hey, Spotify's making a tremendous amount of money. They forewent profits for several years. They're now profitable as a company. Their valuation tripled over the course of the pandemic in the past year. We're workers and our income should increase commensurately with Spotify's value because we contribute that value. So I think the big first step for us and these demands, I think, are here to serve that, to kind of reframe the issue on our terms and say, hey, we're workers and we deserve to be compensated fairly.
Chicago musician Andrew Klinkman is with us, part of the Union of Musicians and Allied Workers, seeking a more equitable system for dividing up royalties with streaming services. So what ideas do you have for how musicians can earn a sustainable living in the age of streaming? How have you been affected by the music streaming payouts? Still time to talk about this. 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with Andrew Klinkman here on the Ideas Network. The music we're hearing this hour is guitarist Andrew Klinkman's Meals from his 2015 solo record called The Joy of Cooking. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're with Andrew discussing how to achieve a more equitable and transparent payout system for musician streams and the role record labels have in the profits. Spotify, it produced a report in March called Loud and Clear that said last year, 870 artist catalogs had generated more than $1 million in royalty payments. And Andrew Klinkman is a member of the Union of Musicians and Allied Workers and is with us for 10 more minutes. Andrew, you know, on Spotify and what it has put out there, putting out this report Loud and Clear, what did you make of that report and what it has published on how it does business?
Yeah, so it was on one hand very heartening to see that Spotify, whether they directly named the Union of Musicians and Allied Workers or not, they clearly were affected and found out about our campaign, as our campaign was able to generate around 30,000 signatures of artists and allies all over the world who signed on to the demands of our campaign. And so whether they specifically named us or not, it proves that, you know, our campaign is getting out there and people are finding out about the work that we're doing. We weren't particularly thrilled with Spotify's response and didn't particularly think that they addressed our demands specifically. And in a lot of ways, those replies to our campaign were a lot of the same old messages that they've been sharing about, you know, how much of their money they earmark to rights holders, but not really specifically getting into any of the transparency demands, not revealing really that much more than we already knew about the pro rata system. It was a lot of hand-wringing, in our opinion, about our demands and not really specifically addressing what we were asking for. But at the same time, it proves that our campaign has been a success on some level, because we generated enough noise that Spotify actually had to address the demands that we were putting out there. We've also recently seen Apple, one of Spotify's main competitors, come out and say, hey, we actually pay a penny per stream, which is a little bit of a dubious claim, but they are clearly seeing the power in our campaign as well and really trying to stick it to their competitors, which again, it kind of makes us giggle a little bit because it shows that our message is getting out there and people are hearing us and joining us.
This notion of a penny per stream, I want to look at this a little bit further because, you know, we're hearing that it wouldn't work, that economic model, there's not enough money in the pot to do a penny per stream. What do you see there?
Yeah, so Spotify loves to claim that they do not have the room in their business model to pay artists equitably. And it comes down to an issue of who Spotify considers their workers, right? They consider coders and marketing employees and lobbyists and other folks who work for the company as legitimate employees, but they don't consider the artists who create the content that they profit from also in that worker pool, right? And so there's always an effort to kind of hand-wring and say, look, we don't have the money. We need to make X amount of profit. You know, Spotify is not capable of paying more to the workers that create this value. And we know that the money is there. Spotify spends millions of dollars per month on office space all over the world. I believe, lease out 14 floors of four World Trade Center in New York City, some of the most expensive commercial real estate on the planet. Daniel Ek, the CEO of Spotify, apparently makes enough money from the company that he is able to float on Twitter that he would like to purchase the English football team Arsenal. So we know that they are profiting. We know that they have the resources to compensate workers.
So think they're fully capable of doing more for creative workers?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But it does bring us to a question of if there is room for a profit-driven motive in the streaming industry. And that brings me to one of the more, in my opinion, beautiful, more utopic ideas of where we could go with the streaming industry, which is some wonderful work that has been done by the music lawyer Henderson Cole. And it's been covered really extensively and brilliantly by one of my favorite music journalists, Liz Pelly. This idea of a potential socialized streaming platform.
That the would American be Music funded. Library.
Exactly. So something that really, it really in structure could look something like the public library system, but could be a fully online pool of music, a library of music. I really loved what the caller earlier mentioned about how wonderful the access is as a consumer to a streaming platform, right? I think one of the super prescient organizing revelations that I had over the past couple of years about streaming was realizing, hey, that's actually not a bad thing that you can have access to any kind of music you want at the drop of a hat, right? We think that that's actually a beautiful thing, right? We want people to be able to access music. We see music as an essential social resource and a social good. And it would be really wonderful to see our society pool together and share those resources in an equitable way while also compensating artists.
So what you're saying is the government would create a new royalty for the system based on streams, and there would be this library, public library, if you will, that would preserve music for all generations.
Absolutely. And without that immense profit requirement that Spotify, you know, claims that it needs, that it, you know, needs to make X amount of profit off of the music that people stream. Without that imperative, I think there would be a lot more latitude to compensate artists fairly while still maintaining that wonderful access that we see with streaming.
We only have a few moments left, but what about the record labels here in this mix? You know, why do you see the record labels still immensely profitable?
Yeah, so they really, the larger labels had, you know, they, this is part of our big transparency demand, is we know that there is a special working relationship between the major labels and the streaming platforms. Again, like I said before, they were kind of the entities that first lent these new platforms legitimacy in the first place. And we know that they have separate deals and deals that are worked out individually between, you know, from label to label with the platform. We would like to know the details of those deals, because for a lot of smaller independent record labels or DIY record labels, they don't have the privilege of working out their own particular deal. They have to work through a distributor. So we would just like to see more equity across the board, just, you know, for the artists, for everyone who creates value that is profited for on the platform.
Andrew, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Kate.
Andrew Klinkman is in the Chicago bands Spirits Having Fun and Marker. He's a member of the Union of Musicians and Allied Workers Chicago. Earlier, we talked with the New York Times' Ben Cesario. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.